This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The 5-day work week and 2-day weekend feels like a cycle as natural as the sun rising and setting in the sky. But in fact, it's a somewhat modern invention, and there's a growing push for change. The pandemic is making us rethink how we work, and it's accelerating the movement towards a 4-day work week. That's 4 8-hour days, not extra long ones to make up the difference. It might sound like a pipe dream, but some of you are already familiar with the idea.
My name is Lyle. I'm the founder of Unstuck Labs.
Hi, this is Matt calling from Lake Mary, Florida. Work for a small city that's gone to a 4-day work week several years ago.
It worked really well for the team. We find that there's a lot more focus during the 4 days, a lot less time wasted, and the employees are more relaxed.
It would take probably a 50% pay raise for me to go to somewhere else to work for a 5-day work week. That's how much I enjoy the extra day off.
Having a Friday as a flex day helps everyone refresh, take care of their families, and get things done. Overall, as a business, we've actually grown.
Wow, Matt, thanks for those messages. Companies like Shake Shack, Microsoft, and most recently Kickstarter are talking about the 4-day work week or have already tried it. But what would it take for the idea to really catch on? Is a 4-day work week accessible to everyone? Well, let's talk about it. With us from California is Alex Pang. He's the author of Shorter, Work Smarter, Better, and Less. Here's How. And Rest, Why You Get More Work Done When You Work Less. Alex, welcome to 1A.
Oh, thanks for having me, Jen.
Also with us from North Carolina is Benjamin Honeycutt. He's a professor at the University of Iowa and the author of Free Time, The Forgotten American Dream and Age of Experiences, Harnessing Happiness to Build a New Economy. Professor Honeycutt, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Jen, from the mountains of North Carolina. Beautiful place here.
And joining us from Italy is Natalie Nagel. She's the CEO and co-founder of the software company WildBit. Natalie, it's great to have you on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Now, Natalie, you and all the employees at your company work 4 days a week, and that's 32 hours rather than 40, not just 40 hours squished into 4 days. And you made the change back in 2017. Salaries aren't any less. What happened to your business when you made the shift?
We were on our, after our first year reflected, and we actually did a lot more work than we had done the previous year. And over these last 4 years, our company has grown faster than it has in the previous 16 years we've been in business.
Alex, you've been tracking this trend, and you've spoken to hundreds of business owners who've also moved to 4-day work weeks. How popular is this?
Well, it is a movement that started a few years ago. Natalie was one of the early adopters in the U.S. But, you know, now there are hundreds of companies in industries around the world who are doing it. So it's really, you know, it's really sort of taken off, even in and almost because of the pandemic.
Now, Professor Honeycutt, the cycle of the 5-day work week, then the 2-day weekend, it feels just totally ingrained in our society, but it's actually something of a modern construct. How and when did the 5-day work week start?
Well, the 5-day work week came in gradually at the first part of the 20th century. That followed a long process of shorter hours. The idea of gradually reducing work hours, it's a long one. It goes back in our history of this country, back to the colonial days. People in the 19th century, Americans in the 19th and 20th century, saw the progressive shortening of the hours of labor part of progress, part of the definition of progress. And the 5-day week was simply part of that gradual drawing down of work, increasing in leisure. The 8-hour day, of course, would be the other a part of it, and retirement the other part. So it was a process. Again, we have really no additions to the weekend since the 1920s. That process of work reduction stopped in mid-century. The question that I've had as a historian is, why did that process that no one really expected to stop indeed did stop? Maybe it's beginning again. It's hard to tell.
So what you're saying is there was this expectation that we would continue to be able to work less and build in more leisure time, but that actually hasn't really happened.
No, it hasn't. And the four-day week is not something that's novel or that's a liberal conspiracy of some sort. It goes back. I'll read you from the New York Times headline, date September the 23rd, 1956. Above the fold, Sunday Times. Nixon, Richard Nixon, foresees four-day work week. This was in 1956. Read you a bit more. As a part of the campaign, Vice President Richard Nixon foresaw tonight for the not-too-distant future, a four-day work week and a fuller American, fuller life for all Americans. These are not idle dreams or boasts. They are simple projections of the gains we have made in the last 4 years, Nixon says. Now, this is important. Our hope is to double everyone's standard of living in 10 years. Notice there, he's defining reduced working hours, the four-day week here, as part of American standard of living. Mm-hmm. And that's the way short hours were understood for over a century in this country, as both higher wages and shorter hours, mm-hmm. both gradually one increasing wages, the other decreasing shorter hours. That as recently as 1956, wow. in Nixon's speech here.
Well, Natalie, I want to bring you in because you switched your company to a four-day work week in 2017 after being inspired by computer scientist Cal Newport and a term he coined called deep work.
It's my term for when you're focusing without distraction on a cognitively demanding task, which is something we've all done, but we had never really given it a name necessarily that was separate from other type of work. And so I gave it a name and said, let's compare that to other types of efforts you might do while you're working and see that the deep work efforts actually have a huge benefit that we might be underestimating.
How did that concept of deep work inspire you to transition your company to the four-day work week?
Yeah, when I read Cal's book in, I guess, 2016, 2017, the thing that really was startling was a lot of the science around how much deep work we're actually capable of producing in a single day. And, you know, at that time, the science was showing that it's around, you max out at around 4 hours a day of real deep work, the work that we're hired to do, you know, not checking email or sitting in a meeting. And so we looked at it and said, well, 4 times 5 days a week, that's 20 hours a week. What on earth are we all doing for 40 hours a week? And really what it gave us the idea that, like, why can't we try to just work, prioritize deep work in our work week and work less hours? And that's what was the beginning of the experiment where we dropped a Friday and said, let's just give it a shot and see what falls apart if we just really focus on how do we maximize as a company and as individuals our deep work every day and work a lot less, but get the same or better work done.
And that book you're referencing by Cal Newport is called Deep Work, Rules for Focused Success in a Distracted World. How much were you also motivated, though, by trying to improve the quality of life for your employees?
Absolutely. I think, you know, when people ask me often, you know, is this for productivity's sake? I think, you know, if we were focused primarily on productivity, on sucking out every ounce of deep work from my team, we'd probably work 5-6 hour days, you know, because you want to shorten the days. But for us, it was a combination of that, you know, how productive can we be? Can we do our best work in 4 days? But then also add this extra day of rest. And I think there's like this real importance to the 3 consecutive days of rest that allows our teammates and ourselves to really connect with our families, connect with ourselves, connect with our communities, have that moment of regrouping, you know, being present and then coming back to work. I think we said earlier, you know, really refreshed, really excited. I think one of the interviewers you had recorded said, you know, people are relaxed and more calm. Mm-hmm. It's had tremendous impact on everybody's just personal psyche and energy and all of that by having these three, for us, really important, these 3 consecutive days of rest.
We're talking about the 4-day work week. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Audible. Chasing Ghislaine is a new investigative podcast series from executive producer James Patterson and hosted by veteran journalist Vicky Ward, who has been covering the Jeffrey Epstein saga for nearly 20 years. Epstein's story intertwines with the disgraced heiress Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's ex-lover, former employee, and alleged co-conspirator. Chasing Ghislaine is available exclusively on Audible. To start listening, go to audible.com/chasing.
There is no denying that there is a lot going on in the economy right now.
So far in 2021, about 3,600 retail stores have closed.
You know, China has banned Bitcoin many times before, but this time it's looking pretty serious.
Understanding this stuff, it is kind of our thing here at The Indicator. It's how we like to spend our free time. Every day we explain something that is going on in the economy. Listen and follow The Indicator from Planet Money on NPR.
We're talking about the movement for a four-day work week. Let's get back into the conversation with this message. Jen in Rockville, Maryland, wanted to join the conversation too.
My company has embraced the four-day work week in a sort of way. We have admin Fridays. If we get all of our work done during the week and we work 32 hours, we're allowed to take Fridays off. If we have more work to do, or if we had to take sick or vacation time earlier in the week, we don't get that Friday off. We need to make it up somehow. It's been great. I can most of the time take the day off and watch my child, but it can have some hiccups too.
Jen, thanks for that message. Now, Natalie, what did it take to transition your company to a four-day work week? You said you started off by just shutting things down on Friday. How did you move forward?
Yeah, we first kind of said we can take the Friday off, but we can't just continue business as usual. So we started to reflect internally on how to maximize deep work. And so that took two approaches. One was looking at how we work together as a company. And we asked folks to look at what meetings they're sitting in or how we prioritize projects and really try to get really intentional with what we're working on and why. And then we asked every individual on the team to reflect internally on in themselves on when they're most productive and kind of coordinate their lives or their work time, their work lives around that. And one of my favorite examples of that is we're a remote team, but we're also a distributed team in many different time zones. And so we had asked the team for a week to sit down and write down, for a couple weeks to write down when they were in deep work and when they were not in deep work. Not to get in trouble, but to really reflect and say, like, what is distracting them or pulling them away from deep work? After those 4 weeks of recording the weekly kind of deep work time, everybody was able to look back and say where maybe a meeting could be moved, let's say an hour, so that their deep work time wasn't interrupted by a meeting that was collaborating around the rest of their teammates. So we really just were able to adjust and constantly evolve so that we can really just continuously maximize deep work, because the more if we can get those four solid hours a day, you get so much done that you're basically done for the day, you know, and that was really what we prioritized.
And so is your company open just 4 days a week, or do you have people working on a rotating basis? How does that work functionally?
We have a customer success team that alternates Fridays and Mondays. So if we had an extra cost to what a four-day work week costs, it's just kind of beefing up that team. They alternate Fridays and Mondays so that our customers get a full 5 days of support. But the team members themselves get three consecutive days off. So we just kind of buffer it that way. But everybody else is off on Fridays.
Have there been any drawbacks from the change?
I think in the beginning, the hardest part of transitioning to this was kind of a self-inflicted worry over whether or not we were going to do enough. We were so early in this that the fear was, well, are our competitors going to outpace us? Are we not going to get enough done? What if we're not getting enough of the code written? You know, we're a software company, so we're not writing enough code or we're not shipping as many features. That quickly faded when we spent time reflecting, well, are we adding too much on our plate? You know, or are we creating too many arbitrary deadlines that are unnecessary? Mm-hmm. I think now the biggest challenge really is that we're all really committed to our Fridays off or our fifth day off. So sometimes if you have to work a Friday, it feels a little bit like, oh, I'm getting robbed a little bit, you know. But other than that, it's really just been wonderful.
Well, it feels like America's from the country's inception, this, you know, hard work above all has been one of the core ideals. But some of the great thinkers of the 1700s and 1800s, like poet Walt Whitman, preacher Jonathan Edwards, believed we should be working less, not more. English economist John Maynard Keynes thought so too. Professor Honeycutt, what was the philosophy around work and leisure during that time period?
Well, as I say, and I try to write about in Free Time of the Forgotten American Dream, shorter hours and higher wages together constituted the American dream in the 19th and early part of the 20th century. People like John Maynard Keynes expected the process to continue of shorter hours. He predicted 2.5 hours a day by 1980. So the expectation was that we would take care of business, we'd get our work done, the machine, technology, would allow us to do more and more in less time. And so gradually we would claim the realm of freedom. We would graduate from work into this realm of freedom where we would live our lives freely together as what Walt Whitman talked about, higher progress, not progress just in material terms, in our wealth, but progress in our humanity. And there was a slew of people in the 19th century who wrote about this possibility, the opening realm of freedom made possible by the gradual drawdown of working hours.
And was the that ideal, was it extended to everyone? Was it or was it for certain people that you'd be able to work less and have more leisure time?
No. It originates. One of the most important places of origination of this idea of higher progress was in the working was in the labor movement. The working class people in Massachusetts formed the first union. The cause of the awakening of the American labor movement was shorter hours accompanied by this dream. Some of my favorite passages in Free Time, The Forgotten American Dream, are from working women in Massachusetts who talked about having an extra 2 hours a day, what it meant to them, and looking forward to their children and grandchildren and hoping this gradual decrease in working hours would make possible a larger and fuller life for everyone, including the working classes, especially the working classes, who would have an opportunity to develop their own culture, to live their lives freely, more and more outside of the marketplace.
Alex, where does the movement for a four-day work week stand in other countries like Iceland?
So Iceland actually has moved its public sector workers. So that's more than 20,000 people and about 15% of the workforce to a shorter work week. So somewhere between 30 and 35 hours, depending on whether you're night shift or you're working during the day. And then in other countries, we're seeing it in mainly in the private sector, but it's, you know, not just like Nordic countries or sort of places where sort of work rules are a little more relaxed, but also in Korea and Japan, right? Two countries that have had to invent words for working yourself to death. So it is a surprisingly international movement in sort of kind of across the developed world.
Professor Honeycutt, we're getting lots of people wanting you to explain a little bit more about the role labor unions had in shortening the workday and the work week. Is that something you can speak about?
Of course. Well, they led the way, organized labor, certainly. I'm not sure you're familiar with a bumper sticker that advertises the AFL, the folks who gave us the weekend. It's a familiar one to me, but they brag about the fact that that organized labor, AFL-CIO, were in the forefront of the reduction of working hours, at least until mid-20th century. They were certainly at the forefront, leading the way. I think as they led the way, a lot of people followed, and the gradual drawing down of working hours was largely a free market phenomenon, not necessarily caused exclusively by labor. As I say, labor leads the way, but the rest of the marketplace follows.
We'll continue our conversation on the movement toward a four-day work week in just a moment.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Joe knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult.
Now let's get back to our conversation about the growing movement for a four-day work week. Bill in Tennessee wanted to weigh in. He runs a business with four employees who all have kids.
During COVID, we went to 4 days a week. Since COVID is less of a concern, we have gone to 4.5 days. I still pay 5 days, and it's made a huge difference in our environment. The stress of family back and forth and going to this and going to that seems to have been lessened somewhat. Still during the week, come and go as you please. You don't have to say anything to me or explain. Just take care of your work, et cetera. But anyway, it's working out great for us. It'd be very easy to do for everybody.
Bill, thanks for that message. Now, Alex, what we've been talking about so far really is built on this idea that people are working as a part of a company. But what does this mean for people who are self-employed?
Well, I think that, you know, the sort of people who are self-employed have, you know, yes, they do have, they have a challenge of sort of either incentives or worries about sort of, you know, about turning down work. And of sort of reducing their working hours. I think that, you know, it does illustrate that the reduction of working hours, you know, we often think of efficiency and productivity as like completely personal things, but there's really an important organizational dimension to it. And one of the reasons that places like WildBit have been able to successfully move to 4 day week is that you've got the reinforcement of working with other people who have that same goal. And who, you know, are trying to do it with you. So, but I think that, you know, the more companies move to 4 day weeks, the more that standard will be something that people who are freelancers or who are solopreneurs can adopt for themselves, because, you know, their partners working 4 day weeks will make it easier for them to do so as well.
We also got this tweet from Gavin who says, we implemented a 4 day week a little over a year ago at our company, TGW Studio in Rochester, New York. Increase in happiness, productivity, creativity, and revenue across the board. Hope those who are able to consider the move do so. Natalie, I'm curious about a possible tension between working smarter and working less. So, you know, trying to get the same amount of work done in less time by doing that deep work, but also this idea that we should be working less. Did you find any tension in those two ideas as you were making this transition at your company?
You know, I think I was thinking about kind of what Alex said too. I think there's the most beautiful thing that we found that I think kind of pushes back against that tension is that we end up spending most of our days not actually doing the right work or the work that's going to push everything forward. Like even for those solopreneurs, right? Like I think in a lot of ways, the thing that I learned the most was that working smarter is really to pause for a second and be really intentional with what am I doing right now? Am I interrupting myself? You know, one of the things that really blew my mind in Cal Newport's book, Deep Work, was he talks a lot about how much we waste our time in things that we think is really productive, like checking email frequently throughout the day. And if you just cut back that email checking, right, that reaction, that addiction that we have to like reacting to something, if you cut down that to checking twice a day, all of a sudden your day gets much shorter because you can sit down and for those 2 hours just do really meaningful work. And, you know, I frequently will write a list of like, what's the most important thing I need to do this week? One or two things. And if I'm really focused, I can get them done by Tuesday. And then it's kind of, you're looking at Wednesday and Thursday and saying, what else can I do? And should I do anything else? So I think it really, in all of these comments that I've heard from your listeners, especially, I think there's this thing that we have to think about is what are we working on? What's enough? Like, what's the thing that's actually going to move our business forward or our company forward? And if we prioritize that, then you get this really, you are maybe working less, but you're producing more or better work. And I think that's what we saw in the last 4 years is we're just so much more intentional with what we're doing and why we're doing those things and really cutting down on kind of the fluff, you know, the random things that distract but feel really good. They feel like progress, but they're not actually progress.
Well, it's not just a 4 day work week we're talking about. It's also a 3 day weekend. And here's part of what Matt in Florida left in our inbox.
Having that extra day off is very helpful, getting things done to where I wouldn't have to take a day off for like doctor's appointments and stuff like that.
Professor Honeycutt, growing interest in the four-day work week is happening at the same time as we're seeing a shift away from materialism and towards the so-called experience economy, meaning people are spending less money on things and more on things to do. What link do you see between the two trends?
Well, the experience economy is booming. With the ending of the pandemic, people now are making a rush to those experiences. The economy is moving in that direction. People, especially younger folks, the millennial generations, are buying more experiences than tangible goods and services. And buying those experiences require time. The demand for additional free time, I think, will increase. It looks like it with things like the four-day week, the three-day weekend, an expanding market there for experienced designers. I really think that it's a thriving opportunity, a golden opportunity for the entrepreneur to design experiences for that marketplace, for the millennial generation. Leisure and work are both changing. Work is, as you said, Jen, at the beginning of the program, we think the five-day week is something that, you know, comes down from heaven or something that's always been there. It's not. Work itself is changing. Leisure is changing. And the experience economy, I think, is at the forefront of that change, making the change occur or causing the change. With the demand for new experiences comes the demand for more time to buy those experiences.
I want to make sure we address the question we got from Louisa, who emailed us that her 10-year-old son wanted to know if a four-day work week will apply to the school week as well. And that's not the only young listener who had that question. I mean, Alex, is that a possibility? I mean, we saw during the pandemic how closely linked childcare and the school day are. And when kids are out of school, things get really tricky for parents. Is there any link here?
There are school systems that have moved to four-day weeks, though mainly they've done so either as a way of, you know, recruiting and retaining teachers. So there are places that are underfunded or, you know, in sort of rural areas, or they've had to do it for sort of because of budget cuts. So the evidence is that students who move to four-day weeks do not lose out in terms of, you know, reading comprehension or test scores. But it really does illustrate that, you know, the degree to which, like, all of society and the economy depends on schools operating sort of in a reliable fashion. And so I think in order for this really to take off, it would be necessary to solve the problem of what do you do with it, you know, with a sort of with a child on the fifth day. And so, you know, I think until we get sort of a more widespread adoption of the four-day week in industry, you know, that's always going to be, you know, doing it for schools is going to continue to be a struggle.
Natalie, we have just about a minute here, and I just want to hear from you what advice you have for people who want to encourage their workplaces to adopt a four-day work week. What key questions should they be asking themselves?
I think the question that I think is most important is to figure out a way to define together with your boss, with your team, what enough is. In this whole conversation, all I kept thinking was, like, the problem with technology making things better is that we just fill that time with more work. You know, like, oh, you can do it faster, let's add another stop to your route. I think we have to get back to this place. What I usually tell folks is, go to your boss and ask what enough is. What's the project that needs to be done? Not the number of hours I have to spend on that project, or not the number of, you know, the time that it's going to take to do it. And then see how long it takes to get there. Because if we can prove to each other that we can get the same high quality work done in less time because we're more focused, because we're more intentional, we can prove that you can get the same output, the same results by working less.
That's Natalie Nagel, the co-founder and CEO of the software company WildBit. Also with us today, Alex Pang, the author of Shorter, Work Smarter, Better, and Less. Here's How. And University of Iowa professor Benjamin Honeycutt, the author of Free Time, The Forgotten American Dream. Today's producer was Avery Kleinman. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening, and let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.